Me and my mate looked at each other and it was like, that was a cat. You could see just the way it moved. It was a cat and it was big. You sound mental when you say it, don't you? But I know what I saw.
I just froze. Didn't want to move because I didn't want it coming towards me or anything, something like that. You think, where the hell has that come from?
Welcome to Big Cat Conversations. We speak directly to people who've encountered one of Britain's big cats. We also discuss the bigger picture. I'm Rick Minter, and thanks for joining me. Welcome to episode 88 of Big Cat Conversations. If you're listening on schedule, this one's coming out around Christmas time, 2022. So, happy Christmas and happy Yuletide to everyone. And hopefully there's a seasonal feeling to the episode because our first guest, Lewis, had an encounter in snowy conditions back in 2006 in the winter then. That was in the Chilterns in Buckinghamshire, west of London. Later on in the show, we will catch up with Chilterns investigator Paolo Nicolaides, who we had back on episode 6 for some recent highlights of reports from that area. First, we welcome Lewis, and Lewis found us recently via our new presence on TikTok. So, Lewis, thanks for getting in touch, and welcome.
Hi, Rick. How do you do?
Thanks for coming on, Lewis. I gather you're now in Wiltshire, but this happened when you lived back in the Chilterns in Buckinghamshire, and we reckon it was the winter 2006, and this was near the Prime Minister's residence in the countryside in Buckinghamshire, which is the Chequers Estate. So before it happened, did you know anything about big cats living wild? Was it a complete surprise, or had you known about reports in the papers and that sort of thing?
It was a complete surprise what happened that night. I had no idea of big cats living in the wild up until that point.
Okay. Never heard about the Beast of Bodmin or Exmoor Beast or read newspaper stories?
No, I hadn't. No, nothing whatsoever. It was shocking what happened that evening.
You were living locally at that time in Buckinghamshire, yeah?
I lived probably 10 miles away from where we saw the black cats. So the four of us were out. We were on the way back from High Wycombe. The High Wycombe to Aylesbury Road is quite a long, monotonous, boring road. And there is a cut through which goes off into the Chiltern Hills. And if you know the area, then it's a road that a lot of people use all the time. This particular road takes you right up past Chequers, past the Chequers Estate. The whole journey had been fraught with danger because it had been snowing quite heavily. So, you know, it's four young boys messing around in a Citroen AX GT, and we're coming up and down the hills and, you know, we're having a bit of a laugh. And one of my mates says, and I think it was about, and I'm going to say about 11:30 p.m. He said, oh, well, you know, we should go up that hill. And I said, yeah, why not? Let's go and have a look. Now, this hill is, if I can describe it to you, Rick, it's next to something called Coombe Hill. Now, Coombe Hill, I was always led to believe, was the highest point of the Chiltern Hills. I think it stands somewhere above 600 feet. That was my father that told me that when I was growing up. And I was a young boy and he used to take me for walks up there on a Sunday. Now, the hill, which is directly next to, so adjacent to Coombe Hill, is actually on the Chequers Estate. Now, Chequers, as you mentioned, is the Prime Minister's country retreat. The hill that is directly behind it really stands out. It's barren. There's no trees on the hill at all. Whereas Chilterns, a lot of the environment is rolling hills with forestry. This one particular hill has a small, let's say, seclusion of trees at the rear of the hill, but we're talking probably no more than 50 or 20 trees. One of the reasons we were going up there was to investigate, because we'd heard, or my friend had heard, that there was some sort of bunker, which made sense being the Prime Minister's retreat. Turns out there is. There was actually a door. There was a little staircase going down, so anyone could walk up there and see it, I suppose. It's like a bunker entrance with a brick and block work, and it goes into a metal door. Now, that particular evening, so if I now rewind the story, because this is quite important, we're walking up this hill. Now, this hill is not quite as high as Coombe Hill, but I would have guessed it stood somewhere in the region of 500 feet, which is high for the Chilterns. It's not like the hills where I live now down in Wiltshire. There's hills that are considerably higher than that. And on the way up there, we crossed the initial field that was beneath the hill, and at the base of the hill there was then a barbed wire fence, to which the four of us climbed over. we basically turned left along the barbed wire fence and started to climb the hill at an angle up towards the summit. And at that point, as we started to climb, we noticed paw prints. I can't remember who it was. I think maybe it was Nick, who was my friend. He said, wow, look at these paw prints. And they were actually following up the hill, you know, 20, 30 yards in front of us into the fresh snow. And my other friend, Paul, he had an Alsatian. And his Alsatian, I remember him saying to me, oh, God, blood, whatever that is, they're big. You know, we never once thought, oh, it's a cat. We thought it's a dog. Who's up here walking a dog? Now, some small flurries of snow coming down. The snow is probably now compacted to 3-4 inches. So we've had 100 millimetres of snow. So whatever it was quite recent. They basically followed the fence off away from the hill. Now, we thought nothing of it. And we carried on to climb up this hill and we went and checked out this bunker.
So this was late in the evening. You had torches, spotlights, head torches.
So this is in the days of Nokia 5110s that didn't have torches on phones. And we didn't have anything like that. But, you know, I don't know if we could check this, but I could tell you it was snowy. I can't pinpoint the date. I know it was December and it was a full moon.
Ah, okay. So nice and bright.
It was incredibly bright. It's almost like leaving a landing light on and being in the bedroom. You can still see.
Full moon in snowy conditions does really illuminate.
Yeah, it really did. I mean, it was light. I mean, we could be 20 yards, well, 20, 30, 40 yards. I mean, I could see very clearly, as we're about to find out. We were at the top of the hill, Rick. I was actually closest to the top. This is on the descent. My other two friends were messing around fighting in the snow, as as you do. And my other friend, Paul, was further down. Now, if you can imagine, the summit of this hill is probably no more, I would have said, than 50 metres square at the very top of it. I would have said, and I'm a keen golfer and I've played golf for a long time, I would have said I'm like 35 yards from the top. Now, my friend Nick McMillan turned around to me as he stood up from play fine and said, don't move. And these were his words, Rick. This is someone that, you know, he doesn't have a degree in anything to do with animals, zoology. You know, there's Black Panther behind you. Now, obviously, when you hear that, you think you're having a laugh. But I turned around. There was something in, well, it was not just something in his voice. So I could see it in his face.
And you'd seen the prints.
But at that point, Rick, that never registered in my head. I didn't correlate, oh, I've seen some prints and he's now said that. We were sitting around and he went, there's a Black Panther behind you. Now, I turned around and I could clearly see a Black Panther. Do you want me to now talk you through what happened from that moment?
Definitely. Obviously, we want description, but let's have the action. But then we'll go back to your description of the animal's form.
That's how I remember it. And that's how, when I spoke to my friend Nick last week before this, he remembered it exactly the same. So he said, there's a Black Panther behind you. Now, I turned around to see a Black Panther basically standing with its, not facing us directly, but kind of a slanted angle, as if I'm half looking at the fence, whether I'm running away, and I'm half looking at you. But you could see the full size of this cat from 30 yards. You could see it. Now, I was closest to it. I turned around to my mates very quickly. I went, don't move. So I felt it necessary to say, do not move. I mean, no one was moving anyway. We're all in shock, to be honest with you, Rick. I said, don't move. Now, this may have been 5 or 10 seconds, but this cat then sloped his body away from us. So his head moved towards the Checkers estate. In other words, a full 180 degrees away from us. He dropped his body off the descent of the hill the other side and he disappeared. Now, without the swearing, you can imagine what we said. Oh, my God. Now, none of us moved. I think Paul started to make his way up the hill to us. So the four of us were now closer than we were where I was at the top, and the other two were below me, and Paul was probably 20 yards below them. So we weren't spaced out anymore. We were stood like Skittles. I said, well, that was a Black Panther. Now, Paul was adamant, I was adamant, and then now, if I can say, if we were looking up towards the hill where the panther was last seen, saw us and disappeared, so say that was 12 o'clock. If you said we now move round to 3 o'clock, to the side of the hill, it reappeared. Now, it reappeared in a totally different posture. It was hunkered down, squatted to the ground. You could clearly see the definition of it being a panther. Broad shoulders, muscular legs. It's 40 yards away now. But it was obvious it was a big black cat. And it was in a what I would call a hunting position, a striking position. So he clearly knew we were up there. Basically, I saw that he would try to outflank us. He'd come down the hill. Now, this imposing, this, you know, this stance that he made was almost like, I'm going to attack. The last thing that I saw of this cat was as he ran at us. It was a leap, a whack, and he basically pounced off of his legs and ran. We're four young guys and we're all pretty athletic and pretty fast, to be honest with you. I was certainly the fastest of the four of us, and I knew that at this moment I was running what I thought was for my life, because I thought we'd been chased by a black panther. Now, if you can imagine, you're now running down a hill which is quite steep towards a barbed wire fence, and this fence was approaching us at 200, 150 metres, 500 feet. So, yeah, I just said 150 metres. I just remember leaving the others probably by 10, 20 metres in the downhill sprint. I was fighting for my own survival as I ran off, Rick. And they were running after, and there was no shouting or talking. We were in a full sprint. You know, it was concentration. And I think we were quite lucky there was snow, because it allowed us to gain traction as we ran down this hill, believe it or not. You know, if you were running on a muddy field at the time, you wouldn't have stood a chance. And when we got to the bottom, I remember thinking 20 metres from the end, I was thinking, I need to slow down. And I thought, no, I'm not going to slow down. I'm going to leap the fence. You know, so I've obviously geared back from the full 100 metre sprint to probably 7/10. But we're not talking I slowed to a standstill, because as far as I was concerned, this cat was still behind us, or one of us had, you know, been attacked. So, yeah, I jumped the fence. I didn't think twice about it, Rick. I jumped the fence and barrel rolled the other side into the field, where the others actually, you know, mimicked my leap, my triple jump, and they did the same. They barrel rolled, and I remember getting back to the Citroen AX GT that Paul had at the time, and I felt it necessary to stand on the roof of the bloody car. And I was standing on the roof going, I can't believe what's just happened. Now, we're looking around, where is the thing? You know, where's the cat? We got in the car. And all of us were obviously panting for breath, you know, as you do. You've just run, you know, probably 200 metres now, because you've got the other field, but that was the other side of the barbed wire fence. And we got in the car and I was like, well, we've got to ring someone, you know, we've not just seen it. And I'm saying, you saw that. And everyone's like, well, of course I saw it. It's a panther. It's just chasers, you know, and everyone saw the action of it coming towards us. And at that time, I thought, well, who do I ring? You know, it's now 12:30 at night or whatever it was, so, you know, nearly 1 o'clock in the morning. So I felt it necessary to ring my dad. So I rung my dad's on his house phone. I said, Dad, you're not going to believe what we've just seen. And his response, I'll never forget it, because he said, yeah, you most probably did some. And he was quite au fait with what could potentially be the case. And, you know, he said, well, you know, allegedly people would release these animals. He went on to educate us as to why this could have happened, and I couldn't quite believe it. Now, the next day, obviously, I woke up and we're all on the phone to each other, and we thought about ringing a guy, and we thought, oh, should we ring someone at Luton Zoo, you know, Whipsnade or London Zoo, and should we tell someone? But, you know, as young men, we just forgot about it. But we spread the word and we told everyone, you know, that we came on with, and some people said, oh, yeah, whatever, you're having a laugh. But even if I was alone, I would have maintained it was a black panther, because, you know, everyone knows what a black panther is. And we've all seen Joe Book. I knew what it was, and or black leopard, if you like. And of course, my friends were there.
You all acted the same way.
Yeah, to be honest with you, we were very much out of our comfort zone. I mean, it was, we're four boys who were always out messing around. You know, we were out and about sort of boys, and always out in the town and everything else. And that one night, we weren't country boys, so to speak, you know, and that one night we felt it necessary to run.
Did you think about phoning the police?
No, we didn't. No, never thought about phoning the police.
When it was at the top of the hill, you guys first saw it. Did you all instantly know what it was? Was there a sort of second take where you thought, oh, actually, is that a Labrador without a collar on the loose? Or did you all instantly know that is a large cat the size of a bigger than a Labrador?
There's no doubt whatsoever that it was instant because of what my friend, if I go back to what Nick's initial words were, he said that Lewis is a Black Panther behind you. And so he knew. And as soon as I saw it, I knew it was a Black Panther. Now, I can describe it. It had a long tail. It stood at the height of a Doberman. It was broader than, or it was wider as a profile than a Labrador. And it had the head of a cat, a big cat.
And it was well illuminated. Was it contrasting to the snow?
Totally. It just stood out. You know, it was like seeing a glowworm. Seeing a glowworm down a train track late at night, which I've also seen. It really stood out. It was a big black cat on a snowy night up a hill behind the Chequers Estate, which was at the top of the hill, disappeared over the back, outflanked us. We were in awe with it at the start. Like I said, we accumulated into a small circle and we stood there. And then obviously you're using your peripheral vision at this point, and you do anyway in the dark. So our eyes are well adjusted. We've been up there for an hour. And I looked over to the right-hand side, and well, we all did. I don't even think anyone said anything. It was like, well, he's there. You know, he's back. It was quite obvious to me that it was hunting behaviour, Rick, that he had speared over the back. And now I look back at it, I think that he lunged at us. You know, I had it in my head that I was going to end up with teeth in the back of my neck at the time, you know, as I'm running. But I'm certainly sure that he lunged as a way of saying, get away, get off my hill. I think we'd disturbed his hunting. I think that's why he was following the peripheral edge of the field. He had then gone up the top of the hill. We'd obviously disturbed him because we were in the seclusion of trees at the back of the hill. So he was inquisitive when we were down the other side. I think he came to have a look. He made himself, his presence known. He certainly made his presence known when we didn't disappear after he disappeared. He came back and then lunged. So it was definitely, it was a threatening manoeuvre. And it had the desired effect because we were off.
Can I ask you two things about the behaviour? I mean, thank you for the detail. Very interesting, because obviously it's rare to have this kind of confrontation. There's loads of witness reports, and luckily very few of them are full-on sort of confrontations. When he was crouching, when he'd outflanked you, was the tail quivering at all? Was there any movement in the tail when he was down?
Not that I can remember, none.
Okay, what about the ears? Were the ears flattened?
I can't remember looking at the ears. I just remember looking at his big head, looking at us. I wasn't looking at the detail that much. I was thinking, what's the quickest way off this hill?
Yeah. When you all ran down, did any of you look back to see where it was following you or not?
I can't say I did. I never asked that question to Paul, who I don't speak to anymore, but I could get hold of him if necessary. Nick, when I spoke to him the other day, we never went into that much detail. I spoke to him and I said, oh, I've been in touch with a guy called Rick on TikTok at Big Cat Conversations. And he said, oh, my God, Lewis, oh, my God. And I said, what do you remember? And what I've just told you, Rick, is exactly the same as he told me that night.
Well, that's very helpful. I mean, I think that's very good, a wise move all those years ago and something so emotional. And I imagine if one of you had sensed that it was hot on your tails, as it were, that would have come out in the conversation and in the adrenaline.
Yeah, it would have done. Let's say, I know there's no one's been attacked by them, or as far as I'm aware, no one's been attacked by one. I don't see why it'd be necessary for anyone to be attacked when they can eat all the rabbits and pheasants they want. Why would they risk injury? If one of us was to be attacked, and we would have realised, and after 10 seconds of running 100 metres down a hill, we would have realised, you know, we'd have had to go back up there. It wouldn't have been an abandonment situation. Adrenaline was going then, so you wouldn't have even thought about, oh, reluctantly I'm going back up there. It's a case of, well, he's my power and I've got to go back.
It must have been such a shock to the system. What was the emotional impact like as you got to the bottom and as you drove away?
Pure excitement. I mean, we lived exciting lives, Rick, so it was completely different to anything else that, you know, we'd been through before. It was just, you know, we were in awe with the whole situation and the sequence of events that night. It was always a topic of conversation the night we saw the panther. And even to this day, you know, I could sit down with any one of them and they go, oh, my God, do you remember that? That's the first thing we come out.
Good stuff. Had you had to say a standout feature of that cat, you know, what will live with you most?
What will live with me most isn't the first time we saw it. That was just the most enlightening thing, I think, that stood out. But the thing that I remember the most was how he was in a pouncing position, and you could see the definition of his muscular shoulders and his head and the way that he was positioned to strike. It was almost like if you were to watch a David Attenborough big cat in something in the Serengeti now, when they're down on the and they're prowling, it was the same. It was no different.
Yeah, it was that vivid.
Yeah, it was that vivid.
You're referring to it as a he. Is that because of its scale? You know, you just think it was a male size one.
I never thought about that, but I suppose when you say it like that, it could have been a female.
They are smaller. They are smaller and sleeker usually.
Okay, see, I didn't know that, Rick. So yeah, definitely a male then, I would have said. It was big.
They're capable of killing deer, and that's really how you judge their size. This one could have taken a deer down. Is that right?
I think no problem. The only indication the size we had of in its full glory was the first time we saw it as it sloped across the hill away from us. It was a lot bigger than a monk jack deer, considerably bigger. What's a conventional deer? Is that a roe deer?
Yeah, mostly roe deer. Yeah, fallow deer as well, but roe deer, the chestnut ones, chestnut brown ones, yeah.
That would be an easy kill for it, I'd have thought. You know, if you had a deer with horns, you know, a stag.
Yeah, buck.
Yeah, it would easily take one of those out. Yeah, definitely.
In terms of the Chequers estate, do you think it was absolutely on the boundary and it could have been in the Chequers estate? And obviously they've got big territory. So do you think you've actually witnessed one that could have been, you know, using the Chequers estate as part of its territory?
Well, after years and years of thinking about this, okay, and actually it was my dad, he said it would make sense because the Chequers estate is situated right in the heart of the Chiltern Hills and is situated between Aylesbury and High Wycombe. Let's say it goes as far out as Aston Clinton, which goes all the way onto Ridgeway towards Luton. And it goes out, obviously, past Whiteleaf Hill towards Princes Risborough. So the Ridgeway. Now, I think that the Ridgeway, even though this was quite off the Ridgeway, is a highway that they may potentially use. And actually, coincidentally, I live at the bottom of the Ridgeway now in Wiltshire. And that actually goes all the way to Luton, which is 90 miles away from here. So I do think that was a sanctuary.
A refuge for them. Yeah, a refuge. And it would be undisturbed, wouldn't it, presumably, the Chequers estate?
There's obviously security personnel on Chequers estate, but I don't doubt they don't know it's there, to be honest with you, or something was there at the time, but I don't think they'd bother to panic anyone about it.
Because there's no public access across it, presumably.
No, we should have been up there. I mean, let's face it, Rick, but, you know, it was we'd heard there was a nuclear bunker up there or something, and we were checking it out late at night after being out in a by Wycombe, you know.
It is a laugh, isn't it? Prime Minister's country residence harbouring a big cat.
Yeah. If you look at it on Google Earth, we're at the back of that hill, they've got the thing. But if you go to the right of the hill, there's probably 3-4 miles before you get to a road. And there's a very dense woodland there, incredibly dense, probably 200-300 meters to the rear of that hill. But we're talking, you know, quite the size of a village. You know, it's a sizable bit of woodland. And it's not like it's a public footpath going through it. You're not going to be up there. It would be a great refuge for a cat. Absolutely.
In terms of following up, did you think, I'm not telling so-and-so because I don't want to come across as some weirdo? Did you tactically decide who you would tell and who you wouldn't?
No, emotion took over, to be honest with you, Rick. I mean, I told my dad, Terry. We never held back, you know. I had a lot of mates in Amersham or Chalfonts or High Wycombe, wherever we were, you know. We were together, we would tell this story to people and none of us held back. And I'm still never encountered anyone, really. Maybe one or two people that said, oh, what a load of rubbish. But all in all, 98% of the people that you tell, maybe it's the way we tell it, because it's so the way that we paint that picture as if, wow, you know, like I've just told you, Rick, it was full on. It happened.
It must help that there were four of you.
Yeah, there's four of us there. So, yeah, there's four of us there. There's no doubt in our minds, obviously, because we saw Black Panther that night and it chases off the hill. And it's up to people what they believe. That's their prerogative, but I can assure you that there's big cats in the wild.
And how has it influenced you? You know, when you go out in the outdoors, does it influence your behaviour in any way as a citizen or as a person who goes for walks in the countryside or plays golf? They're seen on golf courses as well, as you may know.
I can believe that. It's interesting you say that. I was actually at the Ridgeway last week with my partner Tasha and my three children, Ashley, Spencer and Belle Mariana. And I've told my eldest son, he's 14, 15 nearly, and I've told him about the Panther story, and he's very inquisitive. And so, tell me again, Dad. And my other son's, getting to an age where he loves the story, And we were at the Ridgeway last week, and they said, what would you do if we saw one, Dad? And I said, well, I don't know, kids. I mean, I wouldn't run away in this circumstance. My first thing is your safety, but I hope I'm not with my children if I was ever lucky enough to see one again, because I'd need to get conclusive proof. In fact, Rick, I find myself running towards it, with a camera phone. It's something that I think if you're lucky enough to have that experience, maybe not a chase like we were, but to be in the presence of something where you can have the latest iPhone technology, which I have, and something where I can afford it, it would just be the best thing for me, So has it put a dampener on my, let's say, attitude towards going out in the outdoors? No, it hasn't. Nothing. No.
A lot of people say the same, which is surprising. Some people in abstract would think people are sort of scared and inhibited, but people often read it the other way. It makes them more exciting, gives them a sense of the wilder sort of outdoors.
Yeah, it does.
Quickly on the phone business and phone cameras. Say there had been modern iPhone, super mobile phone, smartphone cameras available at that time with you four lads, and you being very smart reflexes like young lads have. Do you think any of you would have got bothered to get footage, or do you think you were so overcome by the immediacy of the situation, none of you would have bothered, you would have just done the same thing and raced downhill?
No, because of how it happened, because we saw it the first time and then he disappeared. Within that first instance, if we had a 30-second encounter, there's no doubt that we would have got out our camera phones.
Because you weren't phased so much in the first bit.
It would have been an instant reaction. However, when he reappeared in a way to attack us, there was no way I was getting my phone out of my pocket then. I was doing my shoelaces up, if anything, Rick.
You presumably recognise that it's rare to have them in that threatening, semi-threatening position as a witness. Yeah. Do you think you're more scared and more wary of them than other witnesses because you've had that type of encounter, or do you think, that was rare, and if I see another one, it's unlikely to be in that kind of circumstance? Or do you think, well, they can't be trusted, I was in a threatening situation, I have to take precautions if it happens again?
No, I don't think you need to take precautions. The only thing I'd say about it, Rick, is, all right, there was four of us, so, we were together, we were a collective, but, it was an imposing, intimidating animal. The one thing that concerns me is if you were, let's say, a woman walking her dog with her toddler, then potentially you could have a problem. That's the one thing that, or something along those lines. We were quite safe with how we were, but I do think that my emotion towards them is, as myself, is quite safe, but I would be fearful if it was, my partner, for example.
Having said that, it may be that one wouldn't be flushed out with concern. It may be that you four guys were a bit bumbling and noisy for it and flushed it out, and it sort of became all sort of bristled up, ready to see you off. But, a quiet woman with a toddler going quietly would not provoke that kind of attitude response from it in the first place.
That's a great point. And actually, I think you're probably right. I think that I think I said it earlier. I think, we were being quite loud and boisterous, and I think that we disturbed his hunting and he came to check us out.
Yeah. This is all speculation. We've got to be very careful. But I think, it's reasonable to have those kinds of thoughts because, they're not sort of at every woodland corner looking to ambush us and see and hassle us, are they? We're finding that they are really super furtive, super stealthy, which they are in their native countries. It seems how they largely are here.
They're stealth. You could speculate that one could walk through, the woods with his family on a walk and not know that he's 20 metres away from one up a tree. And the cat is never, like I said earlier, it's never going to risk injury because, like any domestic cat, they just want to eat and then relax.
Yeah, have an easy life, absolutely.
Let's face it, the Chilterns has got an abundance of pheasant, it's got an abundance of badgers, it's got an abundance of rabbits. You name it, the Chilterns have got it, and it's got a lot of shelter with the trees. So I do think that it's well taken care of in these environments. I think whether they're in Gloucestershire or Wiltshire, where I live now, if I look out my window now and I'm looking out up to the fields, one could easily be at refuge up there and have a quiet, happy, relaxing life and probably never, ever be seen by someone.
The other guys with you, none of them got super alarmist. You know, they just took it on the chin, did they, as an interesting, cool experience that's a good talking point. None of them are sort of on the warpath to say we must get rid of Britain's Black Panthers.
No, I think we all embrace it. I think it's quite nice. We're talking about 2006. I mean, okay, so that's what, 16 years ago. So I've not read anything in the paper to see that someone's been attacked. So I don't think there's any reason for anyone to, certainly immediately after that incident, and certainly not 16 years on. There's no reason to have any animosity towards these cats because they're living a very surreptitious, isolated, lonely, peaceful life.
That is how most people see it.
If I picture that evening, I think that he was up in a field, he'd come out of the woods where he'd been up a tree asleep all day. You know, he'd walked to the perimeter of the fence looking for his ambush spot, because why chase a rabbit when a rabbit can come to you? And I think that we'd actually disturbed him when we walked along where his paw prints were. We'd gone up there, been messing around, and he'd walked up the back of the hill to see what we were about, and we spotted him. He knew because he was looking at us, but without looking directly, he was at, like I said, he was looking half towards us, half towards the fence. So he had one eye on us, and then he disappeared. He sloped his body over the brow of the hill, and then reappeared with a totally different stance, as if to say, right, you know, I'm hungry and you lot need to go.
Interesting about the full moon, because it gave you the chance to be out there in good visibility, but it may be that, yeah, that it was using that as extra illumination.
Like I said, if you turn the light off in the room you're in now and you go and turn the light on in the hallway, for example, the amount of light coming through is enough for you to, you know, operate, yeah.
You said you embrace them. Do you feel protective of them? Are you happy that we've got them?
My partner, Natasha, she is an animal lover extraordinaire. And I am as well, and so are my children, you know. And I just think that if they were ever recognised as being prevalent in the countryside, I certainly wouldn't want any action groups to try and exterminate, eradicate or cull to any extent any of the big cats that we have thriving in the UK, because I do think they're thriving. They must be. We're going back 16 years, so there has to be breeding pairs.
And your lads embrace it, do they? And they sort of relate it to Bagheera, do they, in the Jungle Book?
Yeah, they do. Yeah, my boys, yeah. My daughter, I mean, she embraces it. In fact, I was explaining to her tonight that I'm going on a podcast, and she's only three, but she doesn't understand the podcast. But I'm going to talk about the Black Panther that Dad saw, and you know, she's embraced it. She's drawn a picture of a Black Panther with Natasha tonight, and they've coloured it in.
Oh, brilliant!
I do think it's something we should embrace. I think they are probably helping control the population of pheasants and rabbits. And I think that livestock, maybe the farmers may have something different to say. But like I said, I'm not a country boy, but I do know that a lot of livestock is stolen. I mean, how detrimental is that compared to the amount of sheep that are killed by, for instance, you know, which one is that you have to weigh it up? I was actually in Glencoe for a break with my family last month, and at that time, I remember saying to Natasha, I said, there's no reason why they couldn't introduce wolves up here or lynxes or anything like that, because, you know, it's so vast. You could have a population of lynxes, for instance, or something like that. Yeah, but very, very memorable, Rick, and I'm glad, privileged enough to see it.
Well, thank you very much for going through that detail and of bearing your soul with those emotions, because it obviously brings it home of how interesting and intriguing and vivid it was for you. And there's a very good Facebook page for Big Cats and the Chiltern sightings, and a lot of active people, very interested people. Yeah. And we're going to speak to Paolo next about latest sightings. Anything finally you'd like to say before we close off?
I hope that the population continues to thrive, you know, at a sensible level. And I think that it will, because obviously they must be contained by area and landmass that must control their populations of, you know, where they can operate. I one day hope that, you know, this becomes public knowledge and that it's proven without unreasonable doubt that they've been thriving in this country for however long, 40, 50 years, and everyone's aware, and that we can just, you know, live harmoniously with them out there. That's what I hope happens.
Great. Well, thank you very much for doing your bit of communication. I think this is a very important one to hear from and to hear your attitude, even though you know, it was sort of scary to start with, albeit, you know, a cool talking point as well. it's one that we learn from, and very grateful for you sharing the experience, Lewis. So thank you ever so much for coming on the podcast.
No problem. All right, thank you for your time, Rick. Thank you. All the best.
Next up, we're delighted to welcome back Paolo, and he's an experienced investigator in Buckinghamshire and the Chilterns. He was a guest on episode 6 of the podcast, and he's back for a quick update for us now. So, Paolo, delighted you can join us again. Welcome back.
Yeah, thanks for having me back on, Rick.
Splendid, Paolo. And for people who don't know what the Chilterns means, and we have some overseas listeners as well, so they probably won't know about the Chilterns. It's a sort of hilly, wooded area, a very pretty scenic countryside, just a bit northwest of London in Buckinghamshire. Is that about right?
Yeah, pretty much. It's an area of undulating countryside, and it's known as an area of outstanding natural beauty. But I mean, you know, it's like a patchwork of sort of small farms, wooded areas, got a history of furniture making and woodlands. It's an ideal place, really, for, you know, wildlife and poignant in terms of big cat sightings.
And you run a Facebook page to coordinate sightings in that area in Buckinghamshire. What's it called? Big Cats of the Chilterns? Big Cat Sightings of the Chilterns?
Yeah, Big Cats of the Chilterns. I mean, the Chilterns spans from sort of down the Thames to sort of the Oxfordshire border up to Hertfordshire. But I mean, there's so much going on just within the sort of central belt of the sort of main hills and the valleys that I find it difficult to cover the whole area. But the Facebook page itself has been quite useful because obviously things get shared a lot on social media, and I've written a lot of articles about specific areas, for instance, Prince's Risborough. And obviously, because I've been researching this for so long now, I've got the history of reports. And, I've also got the report from last year of the same animal, you know. So I find a lot of people come to the page and do share a lot of sightings with me. So it's very useful. And I try and put out as much to them so that they're informed, because I know there's a lot of other researchers and people with interest who want them sightings. So that's really what I see my job as, really, is to try and put all of the sightings together in a manageable format and just throw them out to people so that they can do what they want with them, you know?
You like to encourage young people to get out and just enjoy the great outdoors and maybe do a bit of tracking if they can to get involved. But it's just a good way of getting outside, isn't it? A healthy recreational activity in their local countryside.
Yeah, I think I've always approached it from that angle because when I was younger, I was always hungry for information on the local big cat sightings, you know, because I used to live in Northwest London and now live in the Chilterns. I never got over just that frustration of just not having enough information. And obviously, I think when I was 21, that's when I first got the internet. And now really, I just think, well, look, you got all of the old Bucks Free Press articles from, you know, when you started researching, you've got all this sightings data, you've got, you know, new guys coming on. And I just think there's people out there now that want that information. So write the articles, put it out there. Usually what happens now is the Bucks Free Press research from me. They sort of like, you know, they look at the latest sighting and they do an article. And of course, that feeds on itself. You get this feedback loop. But I find that it is useful because, you know, a lot of people today, especially in London, you know, they don't go out. They don't even leave their home. And, you know, this is very interesting. You know, we've got potentially a large predator living on the peripheries of Western society. And I find that fascinating. And I think if more people got involved, and you know, you'd get a lot more people outside off the computer into the countryside, because the Chilterns is just on your doorstep. It's, you know, an hour from London, you know, and it's a very interesting topic, you know, and that's what really fuels the research even more for me. You know, it makes our countryside even more interesting than it already was, you know. I think, you know, and I know from doing this long enough, when you get a good sighting, and they're almost latching onto you because they want more information because they're shocked of what they've seen. You know, it does stand out in a researcher's mind. They have seen something here. You know, they've seen something out of the ordinary. It fits quite neatly with what's also been seen last week.
Yeah, well, we'll come to the trend of reports in the last sort of 18 months or so in the Chilterns in a minute. But we've just heard a very dramatic encounter from the Coombe Hill area of the Chilterns near the border of the Prime Minister's country residence at Chequers. And what kind of history has that area got of sightings as far as you're concerned?
The main areas that get the most interest and the most really, really dense clusters are the hills around Stoke and Church and the hills around Wendover. Now, Coombe Hill is dead centre to them two hills. If you look at topographical survey of the Chilterns, they sort of gently slope up away from London, and then you get these real sort of steep escarpments and these sort of deep valleys. Coombe Hill is like really kind of the epicentre of all of the big clusters. What's very interesting about Coombe Hill is when I first started researching this and I started tracking on the ground and getting to know people in the area, a lot of the people said to me, if you're interested in big cats, it's them areas around Chequers. Coombe Hill overlooks Chequers effectively. You can do little circular walks that will take you from Coombe Hill down into Chequers. And I get a lot of sightings of road crossings consistently year after year from the train station. I think it's Wendover station there. It's just basically across the A413 from Coombe Hill itself. So basically it is pretty much even locally known before I came on the scene that that is the vicinity for big cats. And obviously it's an area of elevation. I think it's the highest peak of the Chilterns with the War Memorial up there. So I've always speculated that the cats use these areas of elevation. There always seems to be a lot of sightings around places of elevation. And as we know with cats, they like to get a commanding view, don't they? So maybe that feeds into it as well.
And the acoustics, perhaps, and because Coombe would mean little tight valley.
Yeah.
They like these sort of amphitheatre bowls in the landscape, I think, and also these scrubby areas. And looking at, I've just looked at Google Image photographs of Coombe Hill area, and it's quite open, but it's got scrubby margins. And of course, they love that for ambush territory, don't they?
You find that because it's got such shallow, chalky soil on the hills. You get that real thick scrub. And I don't know if any of your listeners want to come up and explore the Chilterns. There's a famous walk you can do in them. It's an old ancient box woodland. And as we know, box, we know it as sort of hedges around, you know, people's gardens. But it grows in a real thick wooded hillside. It was recently on Countryfile. And if you walk through that and you look in there, it is so thick and dense and evergreen. I mean, anything could be in there, you know, and I think the cats love that dense cover, you know, it really helps them. And I think that also feeds into the Chilterns having these sort of shrubby hillsides. And you know, you could go onto a documentary of Senjigande National Park and leopards there, and you'll see the same sort of scrubby areas on the edge of the hills where the leopards sort of slink off under the hedges, you know, so.
Right in the heart of India, yeah. Mumbai, that is, isn't it?
Yes, yes.
Actually, Paolo, we've got a poem. You know, we've had a poetry and limericks competition. Well, one of the poems is called The Chilterns Puma, and it mentions the box vegetation that you've just been talking about. So we'll read that out at the end of the show for people.
Brilliant. Okay.
Let's go to your trend of reports in the last, say, 18 months. Paolo, what sorts of things have been going on, and what proportions of sightings of big black ones against tan-coloured ones against lynx have you had?
I know that we usually seem to think it's about 60-70% black, don't we? But, you know, I think I would say it's 50% black cats this year, 40% puma, sandy-coloured. We just have this ongoing puma situation around High Wycombe, Flackwall Heath. I honestly think that the puma sightings are growing. Remember, we talked about the lady who had the puma in her garden. She taped up her dog flap.
Yes.
And I just kept going back to her house. She kept seeing it. You know, she saw it by her patio doors. And I remember in the woodland next to her home, I spent a whole night there, you know, and I could smell cat. I mean, I really thought I was going to get something on camera. I had the whole thing camered up, never got anything. But the puma sightings around High Wycombe have just gone on forever, you know. I always get the black cats, and I'm getting more clusters of black cats, for instance, around Chesham. Never really got much from Chesham, which is a small town, end of the Metropolitan Line. Getting a lot of clusters around there now, around the peripheries of the town, and actually a wooded area that sort of spans into the town, which, you know, is amazing, really, when you think about it. But the puma situation around the Hughenden Valley and Prince's Risborough and High Wycombe has just gone on for so long. It's almost cancelling out the black cats to a degree. Now, the black cats are more dispersed. It just seems that there's a specific area I could draw on a map, a big blob of the Chilterns, that is just puma. And it's usually got a big correlation with, you know, just the fringes of the town. There's always a lynx sighting somewhere. Great Missenden was always a bit of a quiet place, didn't really get many sightings. But Peterlee Road, I got a great sighting of a road crossing of a lynx, and there was a lot of dense woodland in this section of the road. And I put it out on the Facebook group, and I had another lady come forward to me saying that she'd seen one there a year earlier. So I am now focused in on that specific area and looking for if there a route of travel. But, you know, this is what I love about Facebook. For all the bad things that happen, you know, you do get these sort of people coming out of the woodwork that otherwise wouldn't say anything, but they're so dumbfounded that someone else has seen one, they come and grab you. So in summary, I'd say at the moment, anyway, 50% black cat, 40% puma, and I'd say 10% lynx. Maybe 10% is actually a little bit generous. Maybe it's a little bit less than that.
That is more puma than I think most other parts of the country, but that's what the data shows. That's very interesting.
When we did the show, didn't we find this as well, that there were a higher percentage in Buckinghamshire of sandy coloured cats than anywhere else you'd done?
When we did the two Buckinghamshire show events, yeah, but I don't think it was quite as much as 40%.
Okay.
But yeah, it was a decent proportion, yeah.
Okay.
The colour of pumas is so cryptic and more difficult to see in our landscape that, of course, there may be more pumas than we know about from the data because they're just not so easily seen.
Sure.
The sightings may not actually correlate with the actual proportions, different proportions of the cats.
Yeah. Oh, and also, can I also raise another quick point about Coombe Hill because I usually get about one to two sightings of a mottled tan large cat a year as well. And I've had two now over the course of the last decade crossing that road near Coombe Hill. So is that a leopard, the odd spotted leopard in with the black, if they are indeed black leopards? But just to let you know, the Chiltern Forest is known for its beech woodland. And if you look at the beech woodland, it's always got an orange floor, speckled floor. And I don't know if that would make any difference in terms of a, you know, selective breed. But anyway, that's probably a bit far out there. But, you know, just to let you know, we do get the mottled tan, lighter coloured sort of mottling as well, which could be a leopard. We don't know.
Yeah. Okay. Fine. Well, could we now have a nice example of each of the three different types of cats? You've sort of given us one lynx one, but in the last 18 months, what's the most dramatic or interesting or maybe the most important black panther type sighting you've had?
Okay, there was a cluster near the M25. I'm not going to dwell on this because it's a better one, but there was a cluster near the M25. I remember about 15 years ago when the M25 was being widened. It was well documented in the local papers that the workman, Skanska's workman, had seen a black cat along the M25 there. And I've had a cluster of three sightings within the last, I think that was 4 months, around that part of the motorway again. I really want to talk about the Hodgmoor Woods, Beaconsfield, has always been quite a big hotspot for black cats. And I'm sure you recollect there was a horse that got attacked years ago. Reports of leopard sawing sounds from people in the woods and things like that. And I get a lot of black cat sightings crossing that road to this day around that area. I had black cat sighting crossing the road there. I had one coming out of Hodgmoor Woods. Next thing I know, within the sort of next 2 weeks, I had two black cat sightings, one round the back of Amersham College and one crossing the road near the council recycling tip there in Amersham. So I said on the Facebook group, I said, you know, this almost looks like a line of travel here. In the matter of, what, a couple of months, we've got sightings that seem to be travelling a certain route. And if that was the case, it could be the same black cats which are now seen up at Astridge Estate and going up north towards Dunstable. So anyone up that way, keep your eyes open. I did actually have some very credible reports within a couple of weeks from up there, some to the website. I mean, obviously, to a degree, this is speculative because you don't know. I could have said that and then everyone went up there and had a look and saw something and said it was a black cat. What was interesting about the black cat sightings there was I've had this before, Rick, where you get a sighting and then another sighting and another sighting, and it almost looks like we're developing certain lines of travel. And I've seen these lines of travel developing before. And I think that's now really going to funnel me on the ground where they're moving. Where are these specific little corridors they're moving? Because as we know, in other countries, cats do that, don't they? They're creatures of habit.
Sure. And of course, you never know what you're not getting, which could fill in the gaps. Assuming there is a pattern.
Exactly. I mean, obviously, these are assumptions. You can only go with what you've got, can't you? You know, so it is interesting.
Yeah. the bigger your sample size, really, and the bigger the sort of audience that could possibly give you information and spread the word, I mean, the better. So that's another reason for keep on networking and keep on having a credible Facebook audience and network.
Definitely.
In terms of the descriptions, Paolo, do they seem to be, I know we've got to be careful about bias in how we interpret things, but do they seem to be relating to black leopard type cats, mainly the big black ones?
Yeah, they do. It's usually the way movement, they always describe the movement, you know, the length, the low profile, you know, because it's difficult because you do get sent pictures of black cats and you think, oh, God, how do you know?
Yes. Ones that couldn't possibly kill a deer, you mean?
Yeah, it's frustrating, but, you know, it's hard to say this, but it's like when I go and look at a project for work, I usually know now, I've got a sixth sense for if someone's serious, if they're just messing you about, trying to get questions, just trying to find out information, or if they actually genuinely want a project done. There's a certain way that people approach you and write to you and talk to you. And I think it's the same with sightings. I'm pretty sure when you get these reports, because most people, it's not really in their interest to report this stuff, you know, and they've seen it. It's been such a crazy, amazing thing for them to see. And usually you get a feel from that sighting if they have seen something out of the ordinary or they're sort of looking for something. And of course it correlates. It already correlates to a lot of stuff that in the same places that I've seen, for instance, up at the Dunstable Downs, for instance, like at sunset and sunrise. I mean, if I didn't have to go to work, Rick, I would be up there at sunset and dawn and dusk every day with a camera, because when you've done it for 20 years and you're like, God, you know, I got this 9 years ago in the same place. They're doing the same thing, walking, you know, and you just think, well, you know, I'm sure that if you had enough time to put in, you'd probably see one there, you know.
Or a rota of people to have a vigil, an ongoing vigil.
This is where it has to go. There will come a time when just try and group up and really have a good stab at this, you know.
Yeah, great stuff. Could we have a tan-coloured puma-like report? Be nice to have a puma-type one.
Yeah, we had two from Flackwall Heath, which is south of the M40. It was a bit further down from Darren. Remember last time I was on with Darren Hayday, the councillor?
Yes.
And he saw a puma south of the M40. But I didn't get a hell of a lot of details about that report. But there was another one. That one was crossing the road near Christmas Common. Now, I don't know if you remember on the national email thread we have, there was a woman that saw two pumas simultaneously cross the road in front of her. One joined the other. That was on the same stretch of road near Aston Rowan Nature Reserve. Again, pumas seem to cross the road there a lot. And that was probably 4 miles down the road when the guy said he saw a single one, and he came to me through Facebook. The Aston Rowan Nature Reserve there, as you come off the M40 and drive down towards the southern parts of the Chilterns, you get black cat sightings there as well. I can never tell if it's going to be a puma or black. So I don't know what the relationship between the two coloured animals are, you know. But it's just the fact that when that lady emailed me and then I spoke to her on the phone, you could almost picture it happening, and she was so certain it was a puma. She just made it very adamant to me that I got such a good look at them. And I was too busy focusing on the first one when the second one came and joined the second one on the side of the road. No way I doubted her, you know. Once you've heard one and you've heard another and another, you just think, well, gee, you know. And this guy came forward. From what I can tell, it crossed the road within sort of 4 miles, came from the hills, going away from the hills. The whole high ridges of the Chilterns are hot when it comes to big cat sightings. But again, a sandy coloured puma, you know, that's been seen before in the same area, or one of the same, you know.
Yeah, yeah. And finally, lynx. Lynx have been in the paper from the side of the M40 recently. But any other reports of lynx that are interesting, that stand out?
Yeah, I'll take you back quickly first. I had a lynx sighting along the verge of the M40, and a lady was slow in traffic and she saw it peering through the vegetation. She could see it move. She saw the markings, and that was a while ago. I mean, that was probably a decade ago. So as I said, I don't know exactly where that woman's sighting was along the M40. I read the report on the paper, but it didn't say, but that was near High Wycombe. That was near the West Wycombe part of the M40. So maybe there's something to do with the motorways and links, because I know that the plantings they put on the motorways now, they're very dense. And as we've described, they like dense linear corridors.
We'll put the one that was in the newspaper recently on, we'll put a link to that on the website so people can read her report directly as she relayed it to the local newspaper. We were talking actually, Paolo, before we came on in emails actually in preparation for this about red kites, because I mean red kites are now dispersing across Britain, but the Chilterns are one of the first areas of releases, so it's got a long history of return of the red kite and a wonderful feature of them gliding in the air, and often we see them when we're driving along sort of major roads and trunk roads. But they are, of course, are scavengers and the closest bird Britain's got to a vulture really, and play a very important ecosystem role in clearing up, if you like. We were discussing with each other about the extent to which they may actually sometimes indicate a carcass. And of course, a carcass may not be a cat-related carcass, but what do you reckon of that? Could they sometimes help indicate big cat evidence, do we think?
I guess so. I've had a time when I was walking around Stoke and Church and I saw a few of them doing that typical vulture funnel, but it almost looked like, oh, I can see wherever they're circling. I tracked across there and I had a look around in the woods there, but I could never find anything. I couldn't smell anything. But that doesn't mean, you know, they've got great eyesight, haven't they? I mean, you know, maybe there was something hanging up in a tree. I mean, I had a look around. I don't know. I mean, one thing I'd say about the red kites, though, is, I mean, I remember when they released them, they were saying that they weren't sure if they would have enough food there, if they have exploded. And not only that now, Rick, we've got the buzzards. The buzzards are everywhere. And I mean, I live in a valley in the Chilterns. I loved it so much. I moved here, you know, but they're everywhere. You know, they're everywhere. And there's not a day that goes by I don't drive around, because I do a lot of landscaping projects around the Chilterns. There's roadkill everywhere here, Rick. I don't even think cats would have to hunt much, you know, because there's just so much meat here, you know. We just talked about the M40. You drive along the M40, it's always pheasants on the hard shoulder. And I wonder if they just generally attracted, because there's always the hope of, you know, deer sort of hit, and, you know, there's just always a high consistency of easy meals around there. You just don't know, you know. It would make sense, I guess. South of the M40, it's just generally less populated in the Chilterns. If you drive around there, there's just no cars on the little country roads there. And I know people that have lived in them areas and just grown up horse riding and seeing them and just knowing that there's black cats, you know, big black cats in the woods, you know. And I went to uni with a girl and we got talking, and it so happened she was from there. I still talk to her to this day. She follows the page. She loves it. She says, we grew up and we just knew there were black panthers in the woods. But again, because there's not a lot of people there, I don't really get a lot of sightings from there.
There is that dilemma of less sightings doesn't mean less activity. That's the recorder effect.
Sure.
Good stuff. Well, final point before we close out, Paolo, is what other practical investigations are you doing yourself?
If you told me tomorrow, Paul, you have to go out there for a whole year and do this, I would be busy every day. There's so much that can be done. There's so many leads you can chase up. And just on the basis of what you asked them, on top of the camera traps, which I am going to expand, is the whole idea. If you look at the hunter websites of America when they go hunting for pumas, and like, I hate that stuff, you know, it makes me feel sick watching it. But the truth is, some of these guys call in pumas. I mean, I'm using the calls, using distress calls and female screams. And I've acquired some of these. And it does make me wonder. Now, obviously, you'd have to have a very good camera set up for this. But you know, when you're on a really hot one, you know, got sightings there, you've even got like an animal kill. There's been times in the past I've been like, oh, there's just got to be a way of just attracting them to me, you know. I'm really looking at stuff like that now, because there is going to come a time, I know very soon, actually, I'm going to be able to put real chunks of time into this. And if it means, you know, and I know some of these live cams are getting quite small, quite good to hide. And if you've got a landowner in a decent area, you know, it'd be very interesting to see if you can distress call one in off the back of fresh sightings. Because, of course, the problem you've got is, you know, you're doing these distress calls, you're trying to lure them in. And if they are eating roadkill, and they're not, it's hard to encourage them with the smell of rotting meat as it would be in the middle of the desert in Africa. But, you know, if you've got something that really piques their interest, you know, and I've got a Bengal and I do the rabbit distress call, and he just can't help himself. I see him out in the field. Head goes up. He is enthralled. No matter how many times he hears it, he is just attracted to it.
It works, basically. It's proof that it works.
Yeah, that's something I want to look into a little bit more.
Have you thought about using a thermal camera? I mean, we're getting a bit of breakthrough now with some thermal camera footage. Very difficult to get close up. But have you thought about that? It's a lot of money, but...
Dawn and dusk, you know, it's amazing what you can run into in the woods. And I'm not saying I've run into a big cat, but, you know, wildlife at that time is very active. You know, these cats can hide so easily, you know, but they do like to hunt around that time. And, you know, if you're out there with that kind of gear, I think, especially with the amount of activity we've had, and most of the sightings I get, Rick, are around that time. You know, it's people going to work early. It's a guy walking your dog just as the sun's coming up, you know.
Using all the tricks of the trade, isn't it? All the different technology, both the ones that trail cams that can sit in position for months on end and to get out with technology or just your own eyes and tracking and looking for sign, you know, it all matters. It can all contribute, every aspect of getting signs and evidence.
Definitely, yeah.
Great. Well, thank you ever so much for bringing us up to date, Paolo. So nice to hear you're still on the case and you're networking with a good range of people in your area. Is there anything else finally you'd like to say before we close out?
Just to round up, I think the clusters seem to expand. I don't think this is a reducing phenomena. I think this is an escalating phenomena, you know, not just because of the hype around it and, you know, the newspapers, but I never used to get any sightings from around Chesham, but I get like maybe two or three, a flurry at once from different people, and then that can go over a series of months. Now, that was never on the map in terms of big cat sightings. Maybe it was, and I never heard of it. So I think that it appears to me that this whole thing is increasing.
For our final part of this chat, we've actually got Paolo back a week later, because since the main interview just gone, there's been a bit of a commotion on your doorstep, Paolo. So what great timing that is, just before we release this edition. So tell us what's happened.
Yeah, it's really interesting, actually, because I talked last time, didn't I, about the sightings we had around the sort of Amersham area. What I've had is I've had a sighting from a guy who didn't report it to my page. He saw it very close to his house, out the front, very, very late at night, sort of 2-3 in the morning. The next thing that happened was he found an eaten out deer in his back garden. The only reason I found out about this is because the guy is very good friends with my old neighbor, who instantly knew, you know, me, the research and everything, because when she had a sighting near where I live, she messaged me, sent a picture, said, this is what's happened. And I mean, instantly, you never really know with carcasses for sure, do you? But the kind of crunching of the rib cage and the real sort of, you know, when you see that, you think, well, something's really had a good go at it. Looked really clean. It just looked like a typical big cat kind of deer kill. You know, you get the leg removed and very, very clean. It's unfortunate, I was away. I was in another part of the country, but I came back and I said, well, you know, it's really, really strange, this, because this was, I measured it on Google Earth, 0.6 of a mile from where the other two sightings happened. Put some context here, Rick, as well. It's about 0.8 of a mile from a farm where, think about a decade ago, they had a lot of sheep killed, cleanly eaten out completely. You know, when you've got a carcass and a sighting, you've got real correlatory stuff happening. I mean, I wanted to go and have a look there. I don't know why it was in the garden. And this, I see this again. I've seen this in High Wycombe. You get a sighting in a garden and you think, well, what's happened to that animal to think it wants to go in someone's garden? And I've looked, there's no real overgrown garden. They're all very big gardens, big properties, but couldn't figure out what the relevance was. But it's very, very close to these other sightings. And he said, yes, it was a black cat like the other ones.
We're speaking now on the 21st of December. This is just in the week leading up to Christmas. This has happened. And
yeah.
And it's a muntjac carcass, isn't it?
Yes.
Yeah, great. We'll put the photo when it was taken. It may have changed a bit now if it's been scavenged or whatever, but we'll put the photo as you received it on the website, if that's okay. I know it's been on Facebook as well. And I think most people who objectively look at it will see why it's considered to be very likely big cat related. It's so tightly sheared, and it's looking at it, you'd think, well, 20 kilos of flesh have gone perhaps on that carcass, and that's a nice meal size for one adult large cat like a black leopard perhaps. So it's ticking the boxes, isn't it? So this is a residential area. big house with a big garden in a residential area at the edge of town, is it?
It is. It's very, very close to a river course, and I've seen this before with other sightings. Can't make any sense why it's in this urban area, but there's like a culvert or a river that runs through there. I don't know if that's, you've got fields opposite, you know, the main road, but it's residential.
And it's not far from where you live, Paolo, is that right?
I'm probably about 4 miles away.
Convenient, very convenient.
Very convenient. Well, it's become more convenient over the years. I used to have to drive out to Stoke, and I still have them areas up there, Stoke and Church, which are very, very hot. But the minute I moved to the Chilterns, I said to my wife, it's almost like they're coming to find me, you know, because the minute I moved here, sightings started happening all around me. In fact, there was a sighting, the lady who lived next door, where we live, 3 times.
That was on the last time you were with us, wasn't it?
Yeah.
On the previous episode, that which is great to hear about. And yeah, are you following this one up, this one that's just happened that you got the carcass from? Are you following that up with trail cameras?
They're not very keen on me putting cameras up in their garden. I think it's because they don't want to know. They don't want to know what's in their garden now.
In denial.
I've seen some interesting places. I think I can deploy some cameras. I've been on the ground there today. I'm trying to find prints and things like that. I mean, again, it's one of them areas a lot of people walk their dogs. It's difficult. It's very difficult to find prints, you know, and it's like one of them, you know, you always say, you know, you go looking for big cats and you think, God, there's people walking their dogs here, you know, so it's very difficult. I couldn't find any prints and things and, you know, what routes do they use? But I've identified a few decent places I think I can deploy some cameras. But I've got to be honest, Rick, I'm having really weird things happen around where I live as well. My wife, when I was away, said, I mean, I might have talked about it, it's a little Bengal cat. He is just so dominant. I mean, he really is. He attacks dogs. He's a real little piece of work, this cat. I mean, next door, I've got big dogs. He really is quite nasty. He like attacks them and sees them off. You know, it's a little cat, you know, big dog. But he won't leave the house at the moment. And he's acting really strange. His tail is flared. And it's really weird watching him, actually. And Claire did say to me, my wife, she said, he was acting like this before when the neighbours had the sighting. And I said, oh, I didn't remember that, Claire. And, you know, you'd think I'd clock that one. But she was like, no, he's done this before. And he just won't go out.
Yeah, well, very interesting. And maybe listen out as well for any noises at night or anything.
Yes, that's what I'm trying to do. I'm really excited because I finished all my work projects now. So I've got a bit of time on my hands. So it's really exciting. I'm out. I'm going to there's a woods very close to where I live that not a lot of people go to. There's no car park. You've really got to go on a long hike to get these woods. And that's really where the cat came out from before. So another line of travel I've seen regarding a cat around Great Missenden. I'm going to have a good look tomorrow there. Something's going on for him to be acting like that. I thought maybe fireworks, but no, we had all the fireworks and he didn't really bother him that much. So I don't know what's going on. Something very strange. I've never seen a cat attack a dog that big. And when they first moved in, I felt really guilty. I thought, oh, God, you know, the dogs might go for the cat. Of course, the dog wanted to play, but Leo just, it was like, you know, when you watch a puma on YouTube arch its back and just did this amazing up on its back legs, just almost like circular movements on his claws, really gave the dog a good, and the dogs are terrified of him. They don't come anywhere near us, you know. That's why I'm just so curious why he's acting, he won't go out. I don't know.
Well, keep us posted. Must be a bit awkward owning a badly behaved pet. I mean, my new little semi-feral cat has started, now I've taught him how to use cat flaps. He's gone in a neighbour's cat's cat flap and started polishing off his food and scenting in there. So I'm the sort of scourge of the neighbourhood, having adopted this little stray cat.
I'm really lucky where I live. I live pretty much on an old farm at the top end of the farm on a separate cottage. And I have to say, he must encounter badgers, deer, pretty much every night. You know, we have everything here. And that's why I'm even more curious why he seems to be acting like this. So something's definitely out and about.
Just going to say, I think you've got to put lots of trail cameras out local then.
Oh, definitely. Yeah, no, I will do. I've started them up. I've always had quite a lot ready to deploy. So, I mean, I've deployed 3 today. So I think tomorrow I'll get at least another 2 up. I mean, I don't know exactly what the cat would like around here, because we had the very cold weather, didn't we? And I was wondering if it's gone into a more suburban setting. But I mean, where I am, it's very rural, and I've often thought it would be a good place to hide. So I don't know exactly why it would be around here, other than the fact I think that the cat will just every now and then be around.
You think if there is a cat around, it's likely to be more of a panther leopard type. Is that right?
I think so. I think so, because we always get a lot around this specific area, the black cats. It's always black cats.
Yeah. Well, good luck. Going back to that carcass quickly, the little muntjac carcass, you checked for toothpicks, did you, on the pelvic area?
Yes, I did. I did. There was fraying. I couldn't see anything that made it look like there were teeth marks, but the ends of like the joint of the leg, that it was sort of crunched. Nothing that I would have jumped out and said, Rick, that's a tooth pit, you know. But one thing I will say, you know, when we looked at that image, I wasn't sure how fresh it was until I got what's left of that carcass now. And it is pretty fresh, actually. I was quite shocked. There wasn't really even much odor coming from it. So, and there's still a bit of meat on there. So if he's seen the cat and we've had other sightings there, you can be reasonably confident, surely, you know.
Well, yes. Also, I think if you think what a canid, like a dog or a fox, would do to a carcass like that, they wouldn't leave it intact like that. It's so clinical.
It's clinical, yeah.
Great that you've got some topical, you know, local action for us to hear about right at the end. And since we last spoke a week ago when we did the main interview that listeners will have just heard, I've bought a call blaster, because you were talking about call blasters, which could be better than whistling a distressed rabbit call yourself, because they can project the sound at a longer range.
Yes.
On the website, we put a couple of examples, and you've found one for us where there's a decoy twirling rabbit jumping around rabbit on a twisting stick. That's in Canada or North America somewhere, and we see a puma coming right out, falling for it, basically. A brilliant decoy.
Yeah.
So thank you for finding that one. And it just shows you that they are useful if there is a cat about. If we want to get footage or observation close up of these animals, those are good tricks to try.
If you're in an area and you know you've got fresh activity, it's really worth trying something like that, Rick. And also the mating sounds. I mean, I've recorded the soaring leopard. I've call blasted that at a specific farm. And it really travels, even though the device I use is probably not as powerful as probably some out there. Makes you realize why they probably have that rumbling sound. Maybe the vibration, the frequency they can hear over distance. And, you know, all you have to do is just captivate one's interest.
Sure. And if you're using thermal cameras, I mean, with examples of Don in Derbyshire and Alan in the Forest of Dean, you know, both getting cats on their cameras. Mm. If you had a caller that could draw the cat in that little bit closer, it would make
Definitely. That
footage, you know, even more compelling than it is. And so I think that's where, you know, you're using different technologies in combination in the right circumstance. I did talk to Don in Derbyshire about the prospect of a caller. Because he's in such an open area and there are roads close by, he doesn't want to draw any more attention to himself.
Sure.
We heard on the podcast, he gets people stopping and asking what he's doing. And sometimes he's out a freezing cold evening and people see him in the gloom and think, does that guy need help? He just says, no, I'm filming wildlife and filming the barn owl, which is true, but there's another agenda.
I've had that for years as well. People look at you, they think, what is this bloke doing? You know.
Yeah, what lie do you decide to tell them? Because it's, you know, going to be not as strange as the truth.
No, this is the thing. This is the thing, isn't it? But no, again, as you say, Rick, it's, I think when you've got a cluster, them sort of tactics, you know, can be very good, because we don't know how they move. The trail cams are touch and go, even when they use them in countries where the animals are expected to be there. You know, if you can try anything different.
Good stuff, pal. Well, so nice to catch up with you. Good luck with everything. Nice that you've got some time off and you've got something on your doorstep to try out. I hope your cat starts behaving more.
He's been very naughty. I don't think you're going to get any dreamy treats this Christmas anyway, but he's probably going to find his own anyway, you know.
Yeah, lovely. Okay, Paolo, great to hear from you. Thanks ever so much for coming back on Big Cat Conversations, and all the best.
Yeah, thanks, Rick. Great speaking to you, and I'm sure we'll catch up very, very soon, all right?
Okay, we can go straight to the poem we mentioned with Paolo, because amongst the many fine poems sent to us by listeners, we have one called The Chiltern Puma. And as we said, it mentions the box vegetation that Paolo referred to as such good cover. So thank you to Julie Cuthbert for the poem. And here it is. The Chiltern Puma. First ritual, yawning and stretching, pads down on the ground, I slink silently, stalking, through the box hedge caves, the colour of dust. Nothing sees me. I am a ghost. Ears pricked and alert, to a tiny stick splitting, smell and hear the blood of prey pumping. I taste the air. Yes, injured deer. I'm off. Pads down on the ground. I feel the speed as I bound. Across the chalk drum, thud, and brittle cackling leaves. Claws retracted until, feast my hunger, until I'm full. Drag the leftover carcass up a hill and cache it in a tree. Rest sleepy, happy, up high beside it. Looking down, triumphant. I've left no signs to show I've been here. I'm safe. To live another day. Thank you again, Julie, and so good that we can link that one with this Chiltern's episode, and it highlights the higher profile pumas have in that part of the country amongst people's encounters of big cats. In the next episode, we will hear the runner-up amongst the poems, but it's now time to announce the winner amongst the very close voting from the judges. So our winning poem comes from Chris in Stroud. And in fact, we've heard it before, as it was one I read out at the outset of the competition when we announced it. So congratulations to Chris in Stroud. And Chris is known as a dark horse amongst the big cat community in Gloucestershire. And perhaps we'll forgive him for bragging about this achievement. So here is the winning entry by Chris. An exciting thing to be interested in, these elusive, mysterious cats. From dodgy prints and eaten deer to very hairy scats. Blurry photos, witness reports, and different people's views. I suppose one day we'll see them on the local evening news. But in a way, I wish they'd stay, the enigma that we chase, so long as just once before I die, we may meet face to face. Thanks again, Chris, but I have to say it does hurt to heap praise on an Arsenal supporter. Despite that, we hope you enjoy your Exmoor Ale that you ordered from the prize list and your Big Cat Conversations t-shirt that will be arriving after Christmas. We'll have more poems and limericks in the new year over coming episodes. And as we've mentioned, it is Scotland next. And in fact, two of the next three episodes feature guests from Scotland. We also have guests from Gloucestershire, Herefordshire and Oxfordshire in the queue for episodes in the new year. Meantime, if you want to hear the latest BBC Radio Gloucestershire 40-minute feature on big cats, that includes snippets from Frank Tunbridge and from Paul Ramsden, who are well known to us on these podcasts. The Radio Gloucestershire link is available on our website on episode 87 of the Refs and Links page. The link for that big cats feature should be live to play until around the 8th of January. And alongside it is a permanently available extract from Radio Gloucestershire featuring a witness report of two black panthers seen in the Mid-Cotswold area near Stow-on-the-Wold. As we close out, we should pay tribute to the life of P22, the radio-collared mountain lion who roamed the hillsides of the Hollywood area. As many of you will know, he has recently been intercepted because of multiple health issues influencing his behaviour, and sadly he has been euthanised. He was, of course, a fine ambassador for his species, raising awareness of the life of mountain lions, and he touched the hearts of so many people locally in California and globally with his presence on the web and through some iconic photographs taken by baited camera traps. P22 drew attention to the vital need for wildlife habitats which link up and connect, and which human infrastructure like roads and highways can disrupt, of course. So he showed how large predators are a keystone species in the ecosystem and all the wider aspects of the natural world they represent. You can find a host of articles and video clips on P22 on the web, and we've put a link for just a few of those on our own website, and that can be found under 88 of the References and Links page. Okay, that wraps up this edition, so thanks again to our guests Lewis and Paolo. As ever, thanks for listening, and happy Yuletide and happy Christmas to everyone. Hope you enjoy your festive break. Look forward to being back soon. Take care, and bye for now.